Good morning, everyone. Thank you for coming. My name is Richard Cho. I cover Canadian communications for J.P. Morgan. I want to welcome Glen LeBlanc, Executive Vice President and CFO of BCE and Bell Canada since June 2015. Previously, he was at Bell Alliance since 1993 and became CFO in 2005. Thank you for being with us this morning.
My pleasure, Richard.
So, last year, BCE announced the acquisition of MTS before the conference. Now the acquisition is closed. Can you give us an update on the integration and what the acquisition is giving Bell, and how the investment of $1 billion over the next 5 years will help the province and Bell in general?
Sure, Richard. Well, as you know, this has become a core competency of Bell now is integrating assets that we've purchased, and MTS is really no different. It falls right on the heels of our Bell Alliance acquisition, which went extremely well, exceeding our expectations in synergies, and we see MTS being no different. The integration to date has gone exceptionally well. We announced that originally we expected synergies in the range of about $50 million. Now we're saying we'll be closer to $100 million. What we're seeing there, as an example, in the early days of the acquisition, we were able to take the entire MTS subscriber base and move it off our largest competitor's network and onto our network. So we're seeing roaming synergy opportunities. We're seeing network backhaul opportunity, obviously procurement and scale opportunity. Over the next 5 years, we intend to invest heavily in the province and bring our technology and our innovation to Manitoba, such as Fibe TV, bringing faster and fiber internet speeds and more fiber into their network, bringing LTE and LTE Advanced, and using what has become a very valuable innovation for us and exercise for us is our tri-band, our carrier aggregation tri, and now quad-band aggregation. So far, extremely pleased with the MTS acquisition, how things have gone, the synergy outlook that we have, and as I say, this has really become a core competency at BCE, integrating and mining out the synergies as we've done it now for a number of years with our acquisitions.
Makes sense. In terms of the increase in synergies, are those mostly cost synergies that you're focusing on, and are there revenue synergies that we could end up seeing, not maybe pointing out directly, but stuff that will help both companies?
Sure, there will be revenue opportunity into the future. Right now, what we're focusing on and what we're mining is cost synergies, but absolutely in the future, as we bring innovation that I mentioned, as we bring product enhancement, then I think you end up with pricing power. We think that Manitoba, we have a great opportunity in Manitoba to bring a lot of product innovation and product attributes that they didn't have before. And of course, with that, we think there's pricing power.
Great. Can you tell us what Bell's seeing economically in Canada? Some Western Canada is obviously doing worse. Maybe it's getting less worse now, or even a little bit better. But most of your fiber or wireline footprint's in Eastern Canada, but you have a national wireless footprint. Can you give us a little of the puts and takes on the economic environment?
Yeah, we're seeing some modest improvements, I would say, in Ontario and Quebec economically. I think part of that may be seen in the wireless results that we're seeing both in our footprint and nationally. All three of the incumbents performed quite well in wireless, and we're seeing the wireless business perform well in our country, and I think a bit of that can be chalked up to the economic state. That said, I would say the area that continues to be a bit of a challenge for us is the enterprise space of our business. And we're not seeing a lot of job growth there. We certainly feel that there's a lot of service rationalization that's occurring, reprice that's occurring in that business. And although we continue to do very well from a market share perspective, it challenges that business, and that business continues to be in a decline year over year, albeit the decline less than previous years. I don't think until we see GDP growth north of 3% that we're going to see sustained enterprise growth. So all in all, I think we're seeing some signs of economic health and some improvements, but ways to go yet, particularly in the enterprise and job creation space.
Let's start with wireless, because I guess you mentioned the positive performance there. It seems like all three carriers have done well for at least two quarters in a row now. You've seen positive subscriber growth. What do you think is driving a growing overall postpaid wireless base in Canada, and something that we're not seeing down here or very little of?
It's a great question, Richard. I think all of us have been pleasantly surprised at the performance across the board. I mean, what we're seeing, in my belief, is I mentioned a little bit of a turnaround economically in Ontario. We're seeing some positive economic signs, but immigration has played a big role. I think multiple devices is now becoming real in Canada. It probably has existed some time in the U.S., but in Canada, we're starting to see many of our customers have a business device and a personal device. Tablet penetration continues to expand in Canada. We're seeing customers become younger and younger, with cell phones being in the hands of younger children. So all of those factors are driving what we see as subscriber growth across all incumbents, as you mentioned. And then the just data consumption, 37% increase in data consumption in Q1 really helps drive and ARPU, and we're monetizing that. So when we look at our Q1, we took our fair share of the net subscribers. We took a disproportionate share of the incumbent EBITDA, which is always our strategy. Very pleased with 4.2% EBITDA growth, 4.2% ARPU growth, 7.5% EBITDA growth. The business is just performing exceptionally well. Utilizing our network leadership, we think it resonates with customers. We have speeds that are second to none. And I mentioned earlier, Richard, utilization of tri-band carrier aggregation, PCS, AWS-1, and 700, and now adding the 2500 in quad-band carrier aggregation. So those projects are really allowing us to take a lead role in our country of offering network superiority, and it's resonating, and we're seeing it.
There are two topics that I wanted to hit there. The first one is, how sustainable do you think this subscriber growth trend is, given immigration trends, the other trends you mentioned, and then moving to the data consumption, what do you see when you turn up or on handsets that are just LTE versus the LTE Advanced with the carrier aggregation in terms of usage?
Well, how sustainable is this? I think we have some runway ahead of us. We still don't have the same penetration levels that you see in the U.S., although one could argue in the urban centers it's quite high, but across our country I think there's still penetration opportunity there. Can we continue at this pace? I think for some time, yes, Richard. Obviously, at some point you'll see some slowing in the customer growth or the net ad growth across the industry. I think that the data growth is where a great opportunity still exists. As we roll out on our LTE, and now our LTE Advanced network, which, by the way, by the end of 17, 87% of our network will be covered with LTE Advanced, what you see from consumer behavior is, once they have better speeds, better network coverage, then we see more video downloading, more bandwidth consumption, and obviously a greater opportunity for us to monetize that. So carrier aggregation is playing a huge role in allowing us to roll that out, bring the best network to our customers, and then obviously monetize that through data consumption. So I think ARPU growth, I see a pretty healthy runway on that. So I couldn't be more pleased with the performance of our wireless business and our outlook.
Let's talk a little bit about the network and the backhaul that you've built into your cell sites, the plans to roll out Advanced to 87% and then beyond. But how does Bell look at its network and its spectrum position, and then maybe if you can hit when you might expect a broadcast auction later on and how important that is to Bell?
Well, I think we're very pleased with our spectrum position and the spectrum that we have, and I think we're showing how we're utilizing that spectrum and bringing it together, as I mentioned, with carrier aggregation, the only one in the country that's doing that right now. When we look out to the future, I think we just seen the 600 auction complete here in the U.S. I think, Richard, we're 18, 24 months away from that in Canada. There's no rush. The foreshadowing from what we see in the U.S. is there's not the prices that people expect it there to be. We're not hearing any rush from the government to start that process in Canada. But when it does occur, you can be sure that we will participate. We understand the importance of spectrum and are proving that day in and day out in our business as we're utilizing our spectrum position. So I think you can be sure we'll participate when it's there. But it's a couple years out yet, Richard, before that auction.
And then can you give us a quick update on the fourth regional players in some of your markets, and what do you expect do you think they'll be more aggressive? Can they be more aggressive? Has competition kind of leveled off from them? An update would be great.
Well, I'll start in Quebec with our competitor in Quebec being Videotron, and they've done a pretty good job of taking share the last number of years. Where Videotron are reaching now is really, for all intents and purposes, incumbent status themselves, as they have a large customer base, and they're starting to experience, once you have that large customer base and the initial contracts are running out, you start experiencing your own churn increases. I think they'll see that. They've performed well. We've been more aggressive in that province in the last 12 months, matching prices, using our own quad play, which they use quite well, to take share and to win the whole home. Looking out west and in Ontario, obviously Shaw's acquisition of Wind has been interesting to watch. They're in the early days of their own network construction, their own LTE rollout, but they're using LTE on AWS-3, as you know, Richard, which there's a limited number of handsets available, which doesn't include the iPhone. I think that limits them. So the challenge that we see for Wind in the near term, and the opportunity for us, is that we continue, as they're rolling out LTE and speak about the completion of an LTE network in relatively short order, we're not standing still. We're completing our LTE advanced network with greater speeds, and the carrier aggregation that we're utilizing. And then you look at the price point. So if you can't compete on network superiority, if you don't have the same handset lineup, then where's your opportunity? And for Shaw, they're competing on price with ARPU that still sits in the 30s. Look, I look at BCE and the scale we have. If a break-even point is $40 to $42 ARPU on a wireless customer. So even with our scale, we couldn't make money at ARPUs that are in the 30s. So I think they've got a challenge in front of them. You all know, Richard, you know that we're really using the flanker brands in markets to try to take that low-end price point. So I know that this is a long-term strategy for Shaw. In the short term, we haven't seen a material impact on our business and are competing very well in the areas that we compete with them.
Great. Earlier on, you mentioned how you feel like you're getting your fair share of ads, but what's more important is getting your fair share of EBITDA and EBITDA growth. How do you approach that strategy? And then more importantly, where could wireless margins go over time? Is there more upside from here?
Well, I think what we've proven is that we tend to be price followers, not price leaders. Our promotions tend to be shorter in nature. We don't like to price our MRCs or reprice our MRCs for promotions. They tend to be upfront handset pricing, which allows you to be more protective of your ARPU, obviously. So I think that has really helped us in being able to maintain and be more disciplined than maybe some of our competitors have in protecting that EBITDA growth. We've done a great job on the cost side in our business. I spoke a number of times about carrier aggregation and what that does in managing costs in our business, redirecting calls out of our call center more to self-serve in the manner in which we serve our customers. So we're seeing, you know, great EBITDA growth by being incredibly disciplined. And the customers we're chasing, we haven't spent as much energy in the prepaid space as some others have. So for us, that's performed very well. Margin expansion, I think when you look at our margins in Q1, we're 47.7%. I'd like to think that we can see opportunity. Realistically, it's probably small to expand margin much beyond that. But I think if you're able to maintain margins like that, we have a pretty healthy runway.
It seems like the company's been able to improve its network quality and speed, but over the past few years, the CapEx intensity has actually come down from 13% down to 11%. Is this kind of where we should expect it to be? Could it bounce back up or even go lower?
I think, Richard, we're in the right sweet spot on CI. That's not to say that, some years that we can't run this at 9 to 10 and other years will be 11 to 12, but you're in that sweet spot. I think our engineering team has done a remarkable job using our assets. There's a natural synergy in our business as we roll fiber out further and further in our wireline business. We take advantage of that in our wireless business. We connect our towers, which are about 90% connected with fiber backhaul now, which makes for a better network performance, but obviously cost efficiency there as well. So I think we've really utilized our asset, our suite of assets well together, and that number you see in wireless is sustainable. We can run CI at roughly that level.
That's a great segue to my next question. We hear a lot about 5G down here, but given some of the requirements and infrastructure that will be needed for it along the spectrum, it seems like it should be a very tough rollout. And I look at Bell and the rest of the Canadian carriers, and they seem to be in a much better position spectrum-wise, your backhaul-wise, and we'll move into it in a little bit, but Bell's build out of fiber. How does Bell look at 5G, and do you feel like you need to have 5G sooner than later, or is the LTE Advanced network good enough for now?
Well, the LTE Advanced network is absolutely good enough for now. We're rolling it out, as I say. We're the only ones in the country doing it, and we're putting ourselves in a tremendous lead position on that. We'll only be at 87% of the network, the country, or our footprint coverage by the end of the year. So, we have runway to go to continue to roll out LTE Advanced. There's a lot of talk about 5G, but I think we have to pause and really step back. The first commercial application we'll probably see of 5G is 2020 at the Tokyo Olympics. I personally don't think we'll see 5G rollouts in Canada till 2022. And we have to put this in perspective. I'll often hear questions that, are we sure that 5G, are we sure that fiber strategy and 5G aren't competing strategies? And I struggle with that because they are actually complementary strategies. 5G is nothing more than bringing small cells into your network. And the only way to do that is to have the proliferation of fiber in your network. So as we roll out fiber into more and more communities, right now we like to complete about 3.6 million homes covered with fiber by the end of this calendar year, which represents about 31% of our wireline footprint. We've been quite vocal that our intention is to get to probably 8 to 9 million homes over the next 8 to 10 years. That is complementary to a 5G strategy, because over the next 5 years between now and 2022, we are going to have the network in place to connect the small cells to allow us to deploy 5G. So you can truly see how complementary they are. Can 5G offer fixed broadband speeds to satisfy consumer needs into the future? Maybe. Maybe it's a solution that plays on the periphery. But what I do know is from 3.6 million to the next to 6 million to 7 million homes, there's not a shadow of a doubt that this is the right strategy in our more urban footprint. Certainly with any strategy, you have to take inventory and stop. If in 2022 we're convinced that 5G can play a greater role in serving fixed broadband needs on those last 2 or maybe it's 3 or maybe it's 4 million homes in our 11 million home footprint, then of course we'll take advantage of that. But to even entertain that you should be pausing a fiber development and rollout strategy as you wait for what 5G could deliver really puzzles me, because they work together and they complement one another, and I think the rollout that we're doing now in fiber is going to serve us so well. I already mentioned the connecting of our towers and the backhaul there, but that's all 5G really is, isn't it? It's connecting a small sites via fiber.
So let's talk about the build-out a little bit. You want to go from 3.6 to 8.5, maybe 9 million homes. How long will this take? How many homes are you building out a year? Kind of what is the strategy in terms of areas that you go for, areas you've gone and areas you want to go to? And you've announced and are building Toronto and Montreal, but can we go over that strategy a little bit first and then talk about CapEx intensity?
Sure. Well, Richard, you mentioned we'll reach 3.6 million homes by the end of calendar 17. We've been rolling out at a pace of about 500,000 to 700,000 homes a year. I'd like to see that be on the higher end of that as we look forward. But if you're going to reach 8.5 million homes at that pace, it's going to take you, 8 to 10 years to get there, assuming we can't go a little faster. First major, obviously we had 750,000 homes covered with fiber in Atlantic Canada, and we've got 1.65 million homes covered with fiber in Quebec, and 1.2 million in Ontario, and a small number, about 50,000 in Manitoba. The big fiber attack right now for us is the completion of Ontario, which is a challenging market for us. We'll see that virtually complete by the end of 18, majority of complete by the end of 17. The challenge for Toronto is the network's infrastructure is old. Often when we get there, we have conduits that need to be replaced. We have pole infrastructure that needs to be replaced because it's 40 years old. We have 60% aerial, 40% buried, so it's a lot of dig. It's a challenging footprint. That said, we know the size of the opportunity that exists for us in Toronto, as we have, we are the, Rogers is the market share leader in that territory. They have, we have about 30% internet market share, and obviously they're the market share leader in video. So upon the completion of our network and able to offer a tremendous product, speeds on internet, a great video product, then I think we have an opportunity to take great share there. Where did we announce next? Well, Montreal. Obviously, there's no surprise here. We're going to start attacking our largest and our most lucrative urban markets. Montreal's a lot easier. It's 90% aerial. It's 10% buried, so I think we can complete it at a faster pace, at a cheaper price per home passed. So we're excited about that. We haven't announced anything beyond Montreal. Montreal will start up. It's about 13% complete with fiber now. Mm-hmm. Province of Quebec is about 40-45% by the end of this year completed with fiber. So that will be our next focus. We'll turn our attention to that as we start ramping down in Toronto. We haven't announced the next centers, but Richard's pretty obvious we're attacking our largest urban cities in our footprint. So extremely pleased with how it's going. And as you can appreciate, when you roll fiber out, not only do we have ARPU, whole home ARPU opportunity as we sell faster and better speeds into the home and a better video and evolving video experience. We see a materially different cost structure in our fiber footprint. We see reduced truck rolls. Just to put that in perspective, we have about a 40% reduction in truck rolls in our fiber to the home, fiber to the premise footprint than we do in a fiber to the node footprint. We have 50% reduction in preventive maintenance in our fiber to the prem footprint. That's about $3 per subscriber per month of OPEX savings, and that's just the beginning. We have, having less troubles means less calls into the contact center. So from our experience now that we've been rolling fiber out for a number of years, we see great revenue opportunity, but tremendous cost opportunity in the business to right size and really take a step change in the cost of delivering service in that footprint.
And just to clarify, when you're rolling this fiber out, you may not necessarily be putting up small cells, but if you wanted to, it's the infrastructure's there.
The infrastructure's there, and in many markets, Richard, we already are putting up small cells.
I guess, can you talk about, in terms of when you do get a fiber customer, what speeds they're taking, what kind of ARPU you're getting, and what's the churn profile like versus your average customer?
Right now, what we've 100% of our fiber to the prem customers are receiving 150 megs or more. 80% of those are receiving 300 megs of service. We'll have that at 100%. We'll be receiving 300 this summer. So we are utilizing fiber technology to deliver exceptional speeds to the customer. On an ARPU basis, it's about $125 a month, but that, I mean, that's TV and internet, that's triples, that's promotion. So as you come off your promotion, initial 3 month or 6 month or 12 month promotion, whatever may be in market, obviously we'll see that price migrate up. So it's going exceptionally well. No surprise, Richard, our churn is the highest where we don't have a fiber product at all. Our historic and our older DSL network, where we struggle to compete with the cable companies and their speed offerings there. Next, naturally, is our fiber to the node network, where the speeds are adequate for consumer needs today. But you know the 25 and 50 megs. It's hard to imagine that meets consumers' needs into the future. And churn in a fiber to the home is incredible. It's our lowest, which is no surprise. We're able to offer the speeds consumers are looking for, the network performance and reliability they're looking for, and the evolving and TV attributes. And you know, with our Fibe TV, we're continuing to roll out new services and new attributes to that, like Restart TV pausing live TV and the PVR experience.
I guess in the first quarter, cable seemed very aggressive, very promotional. Has that changed since the end of the quarter? And how should we think about the video and broadband kind of rollout? It seems like the Toronto build won't be mostly done to the end of the year, beginning of next year, so there's no reason to push it as much near term. So are we in a or time frame where the video and broadbands might be a little subdued, and maybe we could see acceleration into next year?
Well, look, the competitive landscape is never an easy one. A cable competitor continues to be very aggressive. We've seen 24-month promotions in market much of Q1. We've seen our cable competitors delay price increases, which are traditionally done in Q1, into Q2, and that certainly played a role in net adds for themselves in Q1 versus ourselves. However, Q2, we've seen more of a rollback to 12-month promotional activity versus 24. We've seen our largest cable competitor introduce price increases into market in April, which they historically have done in Q1. So I would say the competitive activity continues to be high, although signs that it's a bit more reasonable promotion activity in the current quarter. What the cable competitor has been doing is they've been aggressive where we're about to roll out fiber. So they're going into markets where they know, like Toronto, that we are imminently rolling out our fiber to the Prem product and our network, and they're locking up customers with long promotion periods, 24 and now, as I mentioned, 12 months. And as we get through and complete Toronto, I think it certainly gives us the broad footprint to market, because as of today, it's difficult to market when you're only at a third of the marketplace. When we have greater than 50% or a majority of that, then we can start doing more mass marketing. We can start informing customers that it's coming, and I think we'll see the share take that we're expecting in that Toronto market.
If anyone wants to ask a question, please feel free to raise your hand and we'll get you a mic. Speaking of that cable competitor, they recently announced that they're going to launch X1 next year. They're investing in it this year. And you mentioned the Fibe TV product, which is very robust. What are you expecting with X1? Is there something that... is it something that you're worried about, and how fast do you think they'll roll it out, given their decision to switch from their product to the X1 product?
Well, I think we're going to see X1 rolled out sometime in 18. Maybe it's the second half, Richard. We have to remember that this is, when we say rollout, this is rollout with new boxes to new net adds. It certainly means their existing customer base will have to be changed out over time, and that is going to take some time. By the time X1 rolls out, I already mentioned where we're going to be with our Toronto build, which is virtually complete Toronto, our largest market and our footprint. We believe that our Fibe TV product that continues to evolve is second to none. It has the product attributes that X1 has, and I would argue it is at least equivalent, if not a superior product. When you complete fiber in Toronto, then the star of the show can move from just being TV attributes to being that of a fiber network and internet speeds that, frankly, nobody can meet. We can roll out, as I said, 300 now, but that can grow to a gig, that can grow to 10, and ultimately, testing 40 in labs now. So I think the X1 product is a good one. There's no doubt about that. I do not see it as being a superior product to the TV product we're offering today, Fibe TV. And remember, they're purchasing this from Comcast, so when I think about product evolution and new attributes being introduced to the product into the future, you can be sure that they're going to be rolled out in the U.S. market by Comcast first, so we're going to have a bit of a lead knowledge of the type of product changes and the new product introductions that are going to come to that product in Canada, and I think can adjust our product rollout plans accordingly.
And with the final few minutes we have here, can you go over what investors' free cash flow expectations should be and dividend payout and dividend growth for Bell as a potential owner or owner of the stock?
Well, Richard, our policy is 65 to 75% payout. Well, that's something we've been fairly consistent on. Said differently, let's talk about what that really means. 25 to 35% of our cash flow is available to us to make strategic decisions with, to make decisions like we have in the past. Unfortunately, one of the decisions we've had to make is to continue to fund our solvency deficit in our pension plans, which has consumed a good portion of that 25 to 35 in the last number of years. Good news now is that we're about 95% solvency funding ratio right now, so I see the need for further funding into the pension being minimal, assuming that interest rates don't retract again, but let's hope that one day they'll move forward.
Someday.
Someday, I'll be right. I've only been saying it for 7 years, so eventually, if I keep saying it, I have to be right. I hope. So we think that the remaining 25 to 35% of our free cash flow has historically been used for pension injections, M&A. We think there's minimal M&A opportunities on the horizon right now for us, but when opportunities present themselves, you can be sure. If they're accretive to cash flow and create opportunities, we'll be there. We'd like to see some debt repayment migrating back towards our stated objective of 225 debt to EBITDA over the next couple, 3 years, work towards that. And ensuring that our balance sheet's healthy so that when there is a 600 auction and that occurs, that we're in a position to take advantage of it and continue to take a, you know, a lead position in spectrum that we have. So I don't think you'll see much change from us. We've been very consistent in what I like to call it is the three-legged stool. We invest heavily in the network and the business that we need to take to have the wireless network leadership position we have, to have the fiber rollout plan that we have, all in a responsible 17.5% intensity. Manage your investment grade balance sheet, which we have. Start to see some debt repayment and migrate back to that, and respect that we know who our investors know what our investors expect of us. We're a yield play, a healthy, reliable, consistent dividend and dividend increase that we've done for the last 9 years.
Great. Thank you for your time.
Richard, my pleasure. Mm-hmm.